Driving down the road with Sean Leahy.
On the road again?
In his Kia.
Something
or other. We don't know if this actually breaks any kind of traffic laws in the sense that, like, can we drive and do a podcast at the same time?
I think it's legal in Florida.
It is legal in Florida?
Yeah.
That's great news.
They put in a statute a couple years ago.
So, your old friends, Greg Wyszynski and Sean Leahy here. This is a Merrick vs. Wyszynski special podcast from Sunrise, Florida. The second day of the National Hockey League draft is over, which means the National Hockey League draft is over. And we just literally published our winners and losers post like a few minutes before we hopped into this sweltering car.
Yeah.
So the consensus winner from a draft perspective is the Winnipeg Jets. I talked around to all the smarty pants people that I usually talk to in trying to determine these things. And by that, I mean Ryan Kennedy, the Hockey News. And he confirmed that their picks, especially Foley in the third round, and then the two first-rounders they had, were solid. Kyle Connor, in my opinion, my humble, limited knowledge of players that aren't in the NHL opinion, could be a Seth Jonesian pick in the sense that he fell to them. I think it was at 17. So that's a really solid pick. And again, I don't know if this has been mentioned too much, but it does transition us into talking about the Boston Bruins. How does Boston have three straight picks and let a kid named Kyle Connor not get drafted?
It's wicked hard to believe that, Wish.
All right, let's talk about the Bruins. Now, the Bruins had what could be called a problematic draft, I think. Three picks in a row. DeBrusque was taken at least 10 spots before he should have been. The kid they took right after him, I've heard people saying he should have been a mid-second rounder based on some projections. Three picks in a row, maybe three strikes in a row. But obviously the bigger issue is the Dougie Hamilton RFA situation. This is a major, major asset. This is an asset that, in theory, should have had teams clamoring to try to trade for him. 'Twas a time in the past when teams would overpay significantly just to get the rights of a restricted free agent, because then they could retain those rights should that RFA be off-refuted. In this case, Don Sweeney, rookie general manager, literally traded Dougie Hamilton for a package that was one round better than what he probably would have gotten had he been offer sheeted for what the expected salary is going to be.
You know, how do you, when you decide, okay, we're not going to pay Dougie this, I'm going to see what's out there on the trade market for him. There's no way he emailed the 29 other teams to let them know of this, and that is the best offer he got for a guy who is going to be a stud blue liner for over the next decade. There's just no... There's no way.
No way.
So this is a rookie GM getting fleeced, learning on the job the very hard way.
Yeah.
And it sucks for the Bruins fans because Hamilton was going to be a fixture there for the next decade, once, you know, taking the place of Chara once he left.
Yeah, it's a comment. I'll take issue with fleeced because, I mean, they did get something back for him, which is good. It just would have been this... It's just slightly better than what they would have gotten for him had he been offer sheeted. But the bottom line is that it's a combination of two things. It's the sins of Peter Chiarelli and Cam Neely and that regime and the contracts they handed out and putting that team in salary cap hell and forcing them to make the moves that they made this weekend. And it's also Don Sweeney inexplicably being unable to work the room. I mean, he talked to the Edmonton Oilers, he talked to Chiarelli, and the asking price for Dougie Hamilton included Darnell Nurse.
Yeah.
There's absolutely zero effing chance that the Edmonton Oilers are ever giving up Darnell Nurse for a guy they could just sign.
They could give him an offer sheet.
So when you hear that kind of thing, and you heard that all weekend from people about what the Bruins were asking for, you just say to yourself, like I said, work the room better, man. Like, there's got to be some modulation between asking for the blue chip of all blue chips on the blue line from the Edmonton Oilers and asking for something a little bit more reasonable and better than what you would have gotten if he had been offer sheeted. So it was just a fumble and a bumble, and everything all of the angstiness that's coming from Bruins fans about the situation is completely warranted. You now go into the free agency with absolutely zero faith that Don Sweeney and Cam Neely are going to have this team on the right course come September and October.
Right, and then those three picks, was it 13, 14, 15? He said he tried to move down with them. They definitely wanted the number three pick. Don Maloney confirmed that last night and said the Bruins, try to get down, but they the Coyotes were so set on not losing out on Dylan Strome that it was going to be hard for them to move, but two, Sweeney couldn't use any of that combination of three picks to move anywhere within the top 10 and pick those three guys. And like you said, there's some mixed reactions to those three guys that they selected.
Yeah, and that's part of it too, is that it's if they had come out of this thing with Noah Hanifin at three, local boy, Dougie's gone, here's the new flavor, then maybe
here's the guy we'll trade in 3 years.
Yeah, then maybe you come out of it with something, but they didn't get anything out of it. So it was a really not good weekend for the Boston Bruins. And we didn't really mention Lucic. That obviously, according to Sweeney, was a situation where they wanted to move him now rather than move him at the deadline because they weren't going to re-sign him. The asking price was going to be too high. I mean, he's already making,
$6
million. So that's a smart move to not go and try to, get back in the Milan Lucic business for an extra 4 years or 5 years at seven a clip. So that's all right. But
and you get a decent backup of Martin Jones, some insurance there for Tuukka Rask if he gets hurt, or a guy who could probably spell him 20, 25 games next season.
Yeah.
But then he's an RFA after next year, so.
Yeah, and the kid defenseman they got back too, he was really good in the AHL as well. It's that one was fine, but it was completely overshadowed by all the other stuff that was going on with them at the draft. The Kings adding Lucic, what did you think of that move?
I guess it's not terrible, only because he has 1 year left on his deal, so they're not locked into that contract, but I don't know. I'm not sure if I like it or not for the Kings, especially after, we know there's still a team that can contend going into next season.
Well, it seems like, they talked a lot about team speed on that team, and obviously this does nothing to improve it. But it also seems like it's a direct response to the embiggening of some of the teams in that division and in that conference, and specifically the Ducks.
Right.
I mean, the Ducks are a big bruising team. And I think that acquiring Lucic not only gives you size, but also gives you some of that Corey Perry underhandedness that the Ducks do so well. So, if you see it as a response to everything that's been happening in the conference, then it makes a little bit of sense. And at the very least, the two things that intrigue me about Lucic with the Kings, well, for three things. First off, how many jerseys they'll sell, because I think they'll sell a ton of jerseys with him there in L.A. A black jersey with Lucic on the back after he's, bloodied his hands with somebody's face. The second thing is that he is a player who is a power forward, but a power forward that has proven he can play on a top line, which is a very valuable thing in this league. I mean, you've got other power forwards that can't necessarily hang with the skill guys the way that Lucic can. And to that end, he didn't have a good year last year, but he didn't have a good year last year because David Krejci was hurt so much, and that chemistry that they had was palpable. And when you lose a quality center like that, then it's going to affect your stats. So I am interested to see if maybe he can reclaim some of the offensive game that he lost in L.A.
Yeah. And, look, change of scenery. We see that happen a lot of times with guys. And he's going to he's going from a Bruins team that's on the decline to a Kings team who have won two cups out of the last, 3 years, whatever it is. So, and a team that they'll be back next year, back in the playoffs. So that will ultimately help him as long as, Sutter can find the right mix for him on the line.
One of the big stories, storylines of the draft was goalies being traded. And the big storyline was the fluctuation in price. There were definitely offers made earlier in the week or around the draft that were significantly higher than what the ultimate prices paid for players were. Cam Talbot, the rights to Antti Niemi.
Lehner.
Lehner was a different situation because, he had a couple more years left, and Tim Murray was
pretty clear in saying that he was the number one guy that they wanted. So they overpaid for him a little bit. But in Cam Talbot's case, you know, in Eddie Lack's case as well, it seemed like the prices that were ultimately paid for both were a shade less than what we thought they'd go for. And it just, you know, what's his face from the Rangers? Gorton. Yeah, Steve Gorton said basically that depending on the hour, the deals would change to the point where he'd call a team and they'd call back and the offer that had been on the table all of a sudden wasn't there anymore. So it was a very, very bumpy and turbulent market for the teams trying to deal goaltenders. And it'll be interesting to see where the whole thing goes. You know, the Sharks spoke at the end of the draft, and Doug Wilson made mention of, like, basically mystery goalies that we don't talk about in the media but that are actually available. And it makes you think whether or not they're going to make a significant move to try to get a real starter in there with Alex Stalak as the backup. But that was also the interesting thing is, you know, the acquisition of Anton Khudobin by the Anaheim Ducks gave them three goalies. Jim Nill, in acquiring the rights to Antti Niemi, basically said he wants a two-headed monster. You know, you need two goalies to win in this league. Is this now the way of the world? Are we getting away from the Corey Crawfords and such that everybody covets because they play upwards of 60-whatever games, or, you know, Carey Price or whomever? Like, are we now firmly in the two-goalie platoon era in the National Hockey League?
Well, I think the NHL is a copycat league, like all sports leagues, really, so that could be the case. But Nill specifically cited the Stars' travel as a factor in why he wanted a second guy who was an experienced goalie to bring in, so he's not letting it out there 60, 65, 70 times a year with all the travel they're doing, and obviously the risk of injury, where now you can split the time. But that's certainly a gamble, because, mm-hmm. you know, look at the Ducks last year going back and forth with Gibson and Anderson. And now they finally settled on Anderson, and now they have three goalies out there with Khudobin, Gibson, and Freddie Anderson. So that'd be interesting to see what they do. I mean, well, how much of a overpay does Doug Wilson have to do to get John Gibson out of Anaheim?
Yeah,
with a division rival.
One, it's funny, we were talking about goalies. You know, one of the trends that we thought we'd see at the draft was Tyler Johnson making the world safe for diminutive small forwards to get drafted. That didn't necessarily happen. The thing that we did see at the draft, the Tampa Bay Lightning influence trend that we did see at the draft, was if Ben Bishop can become a star after gestating in the AHL for a few years and stumbling around and trying to find his way, so can other goalies, a.k.a. Jacob Markstrom. Like, Trevor Linden specifically cited Ben Bishop in saying that we think Markstrom could eventually be better than Lack and eventually could ascend to the starting job in Vancouver.
Markstrom, you know, I argued this a couple years ago, Markstrom should have had that chance in Florida, but Talon went out and signed Tim Thomas.
Yeah.
For, you know, they weren't going to make the playoffs that year. You had a kid in Markstrom who had a bright future, and then he didn't get a shot, and obviously they go out and get Luongo, and Markstrom heads the other way. So it's an interesting risk, and we'll certainly see if it pays off for them.
Buffalo Sabres, I've been mentioning all weekend, Tim Murray is my favorite hockey thing right now. He is the best nerd in all of sports. Anytime that man is speaking and is surrounded by microphones, I want to be there because he's awkward and he's always pushing up his glasses, but he's also like, he's like an angry nerd. Like, he says the most bizarre things about guys being on mushrooms.
What about the way he introduced Jack Eichel? He didn't even say this. Buffalo Sabres take Jack Eichel.
Right. Well,
to the point.
He said Buffalo takes Jack Eichel or something like that, and was asked why he used only four words when he said that he would like to use six in announcing the pick, and he said something along the lines of, like, if I used six words this year, you know, how many would I have left for next year or something like. He's just a weirdo, and it's so much fun to have a real weirdo. I made this comparison to Sean Gentile of the Sporting News while we were walking around the bowels of the arena. Imagine if if Congress was hit by a meteor. You know, the U.S. Congress is hit by a meteor during, like, the State of the Union address, and everybody was wiped out except for like the director of the Department of Interior or some menial thing like that. Like the wonkiest guy who never wants to deal with people all of a sudden became president of the United States. Like that's kind of what Tim Murray is. It's kind of like you take the smartest little nerdiest guy in the office and say, oh, by the way, you now have the single most public job in our organization. But he handles it so well. He's clearly relishing the fact that he doesn't care what anybody thinks about his public persona. So he literally says anything that he wants to, referencing guys on mushrooms, talking about Dan Bilesma putting his balls on the table as a coach. Like it's amazing.
He's so refreshing and different that for all the talk of offer sheets every summer, I could definitely see him pulling one this summer. Not caring. You know, you hear about the old boys network and these guys don't want to upset another GM because you offer sheet this guy, they'll go offer your guy in the future. But I don't think Murray cares. And if you're like Brandon Saad's still out there, why not take a shot? And you know, he's building to contend quickly, so
right.
You can risk those draft picks in the future if he succeeds.
And the best kind of angry nerd is the kind that kind of inherently knows they're cool on the inside. And by that I mean that Tim Murray is basically the angry nerd with an extraordinarily wealthy dad. You know, like having Terry Pegula at your back and his wallet, you know, within reach is so empowering for Tim Murray. It's insane. And to that end, obviously, we haven't gotten to Ryan O'Reilly yet. What an amazing coup for Buffalo.
What a weekend, first of all.
I mean, I know. You draft Jack Eichel and trade for Ryan O'Reilly. O'Reilly was so sought after and is a very special player in the sense that he's good in both ends of the ice so well. And really does go into a situation where he's going to take a lot of pressure off of Eichel and a lot of pressure off of Sam Reinhart. And even if you want to go down the lineup, taking pressure off of Gergens as well. Everything there is so perfect for him to be in that situation. And, you know, the cost going the other way to Colorado was good. I mean, Zadorov's very good. You know, Grigorenko, if he gets his act together, could be a very good player. Like, I think they gave up something to get O'Reilly. I'd love to have talked to Colorado about that, but you couldn't effing find them anywhere at the draft. It was very bizarre. But I mean, at the end of the day, Buffalo has those assets. I mean, Darcy Regier filled that cupboard in a way in which they were able to amass these young players and amass these picks, and the end result is that Tim Murray is able to pull off a trade like he did for O'Reilly.
Yeah, and I think, if I remember correctly, Buffalo has about $15 million under the cap right now, and you know they're not done. So once free agency hits, whether it's an offer sheet or just UFAs, I mean, they're probably going to be back in the playoffs next year. It's just the way that how quickly these things have sped up there. And the players he's bringing in pretty much on a weekly basis. Not only, and add that to a healthy Evander Kane next summer, next season, who probably will have a chip on his shoulder and score 30 goals.
Healthy Evander Kane, Dan Miles was your coach. It's refreshing to see a team that pulls off the tank and then doesn't try to, like, live off the goodwill of people knowing that they're building something and actually is going for it a little bit in the year after they get their guy. So that's kind of a good thing to see. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we haven't hit on. The Devils, from a personal perspective, Zacha was the guy I wanted, as you guys all know. I'm very happy that they got him. Fun fact, he has a picture of himself and Patrick Elias when Zacha was a youth player and Elias bought the cup to Czech Republic. That's kind of a really cool thing to know. He's going to maybe get a chance to play with Elias.
But did he touch the cup?
I don't know if he did or didn't.
Andre Schuster, the Lightning, was smart enough when he went to Elias's cup party one of those times as well. He knew the story. You don't touch the cup. So if Zacha touched the cup, then you're screwed.
Well, I think we're screwed for a number of reasons. primarily because Zacha is now the only forward prospect that we have that's worth a damn.
And the only check you have that's under like 39.
And the impeccably named Mackenzie Blackwood, of course, is the Devils goalie of the future, which is also very exciting. Although He said that his favorite goalie growing up was Patrick Waugh, but I've come to find out that's because his father forced him to be an Avalanche fan, which, you know.
Get on that bandwagon.
Get on that bandwagon, exactly. Chicago does nothing. The Leafs do nothing. Nobody of note gets traded from those teams. Hagelin to the Ducks. He'll score just a ton of goals. He'll get Bolesky's numbers and then some playing with Getzlaff and Perry if that's indeed who he plays with there. Penguins. Your Penguins didn't really do anything, did they?
They're supposedly still hot on Kessel, but you know they didn't have a first round pick. They had a second rounder. But yeah.
Now let me ask you this.
I don't know what's going on there.
If by some miracle they actually did acquire Phil Kessel and made it work financially, who do you want to see him play with?
That's a good question. Because we saw what Neil did with Malkin.
Right.
But obviously Sidney Crosby. But I guess you can't go wrong, right?
Well, the question. Yeah.
Because you don't know about Dupuis. He could be back. Do you put Dupuis, Kunitz, and Crosby back? You know, Malkin and Perron. You know, it's tough.
It's like Dad got a sports car, and he's got two sons, and who gets to drive it? You know, which one gets to drive it?
But here's the problem: Phil Kessel's great and all, and would be great on the Penguins, but how are you going to fill out the bottom six?
I don't know.
That's what killed them this year.
That's.
You don't need Phil Kessel,
right?
Especially the way Jimmy R likes to spend to the cap, and sometimes ice shorthanded rosters during regular season games, especially if you're going to go with a very young defense core. But I'd be more concerned with filling out that bottom six than adding a guy like Phil Kessel.
I also like to spend with caps. If you collect 100 bottle caps, they'll give you a nickel. A nickel!
He wore an onion as a belt. That was the style of the time.
Did we cover everything? Did we miss anything big? I'm trying to think of all the stuff we've written. Niemi, Talbot.
The Chinese kid going.
Yeah. Cool. Obviously. Adong Song getting drafted is amazing. Reminds me of when Nathan Walker got drafted by the Caps, as far as like players in places you don't expect there to be.
And we heard Sasky screaming all over.
Oh God, she went insane.
Australia.
But Song was interesting because one, he said he never met Charles Wong, which I assumed he maybe had at some point playing in New Jersey.
And Wong does a lot of hockey programs over there as well.
Precisely,
teams over.
Yeah, and then obviously he gets drafted by the Islanders, so you figure there was some connection there. But real good kid, and clearly understands in some small way his place in history and knowing how exciting it is for kids that were in his situation in China that, you know, are growing up without having any representation in the National Hockey League, now maybe having someone at the very least in pro hockey in North America they can look at and say, oh my God, if he can make it, so can I. And that's such an important... I remember Kopitar talking about that in context of Slovenia at the Olympics. You know, just having kids being able to see someone that made it and know that they're out there and everything just, you know, might be the difference between, you know, picking up a baseball bat or picking up a hockey stick at some point for him. So, assuming they have baseball in Slovenia, I don't even know. I assume it's like frog ball.
They have it in Sweden. It's pretty big over there. From
Sweden, yeah?
Yeah, it's pretty big.
No.
I think, or maybe Finland. One of the Nordic countries.
Mm. Yeah, they're all the same, aren't they?
Well, blonde hair, blue-eyed.
That's right.
Good-looking people.
Yep. Most have either several I's in their names or Ufsen somewhere in it.
Random J's. That's a good name for a band, by the way.
A reggae band.
Yeah.
So,
Plain.
Oh, the last thing we need to talk about, obviously, is the last thing that happened in the draft, which is that Chris Pronger got traded.
You mean a guy who's going to be in the Hall of Fame in 48 hours?
Right. Can we talk first about how this is the second? Is she topless on that top of that cab? The Adam.
No. There's a she's got a
like a flesh colored bikini.
Yeah.
Man, South Florida is weird.
It's a gold bikini because the strip club is called Solid
Gold Bikini. She's a girl who's covered in gold. Chris Pronger got traded. First off, this is the second time that the Flyers have pulled this nonsense, where the draft is over, they're literally unscrewing the risers that media are working on, and all of a sudden you hear, oh, Flyers made a trade. The last time was the Van Riemsdyk trade, in which the Flyers
Ron
made
Hextall did his conference call with reporters moments after the news came out from the gate at the airport.
Yeah.
He was right in front of the gate.
Yeah, it's
that's how soon they were ready to go home.
Atrocious. But yeah, so Pronger's contract, as was specified by the Arizona Coyotes, traded to the Coyotes in exchange for Sam Gagne. Nicholas Grossman goes from the Flyers to the Coyotes as well. I mean,
and I think the Flyers retain $500,000.
Right. It's the way of the world. I mean, it's the way the CBA is written. And
look, Mark Savard. Everyone expected Mark Savard to possibly be traded, not
right.
Pronger.
Right. Yeah, which in some ways may have been even more egregious. Although, I don't know, he doesn't work for the league.
Well, yeah.
Again, the idea that a person who works for the National Hockey League was just traded to a team that the NHL sold to its current owners.
But the best part? Chris Pronger needed to waive his no-move clause.
I know.
A guy who's never playing hockey again, who's now a league employee.
It's unbelievable.
Chris... hi, Ron here. How do you feel about ending your career as a Phoenix, as an Arizona Coyote?
Yeah, that, and that's the question. Does he go into the Hall of Fame as a member of the Coyotes?
Look, I just want to know how soon I can get my Pronger Coyote jersey so I can put it next to my Tim Thomas Islander jersey.
Best Coyote ever, defensively?
Defensively?
Yeah. I don't know who else would be in that
game. Oh, come on. Teppo Numminen, man.
Oh, that's a good point. Oh, Phil Housley. Wasn't he a member of the Coyotes at one point, too?
Probably had that Brett Hull Coyotes stink on him.
So that trade happened. And listen, it's the way of the world. It's the way of the CBA. There's nothing you can do about it. You have to rewrite the rules if you don't want this thing to happen. We all agree that it's silly that a player that is never going to play again and is currently working for the National Hockey League's Department of Player Safety.
So does this mean now he can rule on Flyers' possible suspensions,
you know,
but not Coyotes?
These are the exciting questions that we'll have answered for us in the coming weeks as we all talk about how Chris Pronger won't fit with the Coyotes because he can't play. It's really a remarkable story. So anyways, I see that we're rolling up close to where the Westin is. We should probably sign off. If we missed anything, I'm sure Jeffy and I will cover it on Monday. But as it stands, I think we did a really good podcast while you were driving. I mean, you are a multitasker. You are Lilu multitask in this car right now.
I'm a very talented boy.
You are. There you go. Hey, there's the Jimmy John's where we got food from the while we were watching the awards. Yeah.
All right. I actually got the beers in my fridge, by the way.
Yeah, I have one beer in my fridge too that I haven't had.
Take some.
And if we hadn't said it before, we'll say it again. Thanks, everybody, for coming to Blondie's other night for our party.
We're about to pass.
We're about to pass that. And listen, thanks to the good people of Sunrise or Fort Lauderdale. Fort Lauderdale, I don't even know if...
This is Fort Lauderdale.
Sunrise isn't even a real city, is it?
It's made up.
Okay. Thanks to the good people of Fort Lauderdale for putting on a great show and all that stuff. Not shooting us in the face. It's always a good thing.
Here's the elbow room right across the street.
Yep. There it is right there. And, yeah, good times had by all, I think. And back on Monday, hopefully, for more potty fun. Don't forget, your boys, all day, July 1st, me and Leahy manning the
war room.
The war room at Yahoo headquarters in New York, assuming that they give us one and we're not kicked out by
a TV.
A man with a fancy mustache, as we were last time. And that's all she wrote. I am Greg Wyszynski of Yahoo Sports. This is Sean Leahy of Yahoo Sports. And this has been a Merrick vs. Wyszynski special podcast in the Kia. Rolling down the street. Rolling down the A1A.
Like Vanilla Ice.
That's right.
Said.
Right. Looking at girls trying to get their Kardashian on and failing.
Miserably.
Yes. And looking at dudes with huge guts carrying big bags of food to the beach. It's my kind of ride. All right, that's it. Bye, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. And that's the show's over. Bye.